507-5759 or at SchofieldSolarAndHeating.com. 7 o'clock, there's an iTalk, starts right now. And welcome to Thursday Night Talk. We are back. Hope you all enjoyed your holiday week. Tom Wheeler is our host tonight. As always, we welcome your contributions. Give us a call at 826-4805 or at 800-640-5911. And we also accept texts at 492-KHSU.
All right. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk. I have three wonderful, extraordinary guests with me tonight. The man just, laughing over there
starting
is
starting it off real.
Is Greg Foster, Executive Director at the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission. I always have to remind myself what that last C is. And we have Susan Seaman from the Arcata Economic Development Corporation. All the C's are different. And Scott Adair, the Director of Economic Development at Humboldt County. Welcome, folks.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
All right. So I want y'all to go around the table and talk about who you are and what you do or what your agency does. And I'm going to throw the ball to Greg first.
Oh, okay. And I'll be relatively brief. We're actually, so I'm the executive director of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission. And we're a 41-year-old, what's called a joint powers authority. So we're kind of like a public agency. Very small. There's only four of us. And our primary program and what we what also sustains us is a loan program. So we do lending to businesses that can't get, or and nonprofits and organizations that can't get lending through traditional sources. And that's been our bread and butter and what sustained us now for 41 years. We do other things too. Probably most high profile is the Fly Humboldt initiative, and we go out and try to work on getting airlines here. And then we do some other work in housing. We've done a lot of work in broadband historically and do that a little bit now with Campus Center. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, real briefly. But we have 19 members. So they're all elected officials.
All right. And I'll pass the ball to Susan Seaman, who and I just want to do a little brag. In addition to her work for the Economic Development Corporation, she is our incoming mayor in the city of Eureka. So congratulations. You missed the news.
Where have I been?
So she's a dual threat, really.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Susan, take it away. Who are you and what do you do?
So I'm with Arcata Economic Development Corporation, and we're going to sound a lot like what Greg does. What Greg's organization is a joint powers authority. We are actually a nonprofit corporation. We have a bit of a problem with our name because it says Arcata Economic Development, but we really serve six counties. We provide business loans to those who wouldn't be able to get them necessarily through traditional lenders, and also have been doing larger community development projects. A lot of times when we think about some of the stuff that Greg works on, which are the big infrastructure things, I always like to think we kind of go the opposite way and do projects sort of with the smaller business community, starting with Lemonade Day and working with our very youngest entrepreneurs every year, encouraging them to get there.
All right, Lemonade Day, quickly, what's Lemonade Day?
It is one day a year where we encourage kids to learn how to run a business by running a lemonade stand. And it's pretty awesome. It's coming up in June again.
All right, get thirsty. And Scott Adair, the Director of Economic Development at Humboldt County. What do you do in that position, Scott?
We do quite a few different things, Tom. And I'd like to start off by saying happy to be here and with you and Susan and Greg, and looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have tonight. So I'm with the County of Humboldt Economic Development, and my role is as director of that agency. County of Humboldt Economic Development, our purview entails all of the local and countywide economic development programs. We're somewhat of an umbrella for a lot of the different economic development activity that's occurring within the county. And we manage through a lot of the federal programs and state level programs and incentives and grant programs like workforce and other programs to help bolster economic, I guess, vibrancy and vitality within the community.
All right. And so if you didn't pick up on it from my selection of guests, tonight's topic is our economy. And let me just kind of give the background on this. So our unemployment rate right now is 3%, which has to be near a record low, if not the record low.
It would be the record low.
Yeah. So economists, when they talk about 3% unemployment, they talk about that's a full employment scenario.
Right.
You know, so based on that metric, it seems like we're doing okay. But I still feel within the community that there is significant economic anxiety, right? So the Mateel, if you're a SoHum listener, you know, this is a community center down in Redway. It is a source of pride for the community. It's really the community hub that is in significant economic trouble. It may or may not be related to our local economy right now. It could be because of other financial decisions. We have the co-op. The co-op has gone through some well-publicized issues really related to the amount of cash sales that are going on at the co-op. The cash sales are significantly down. Other retail businesses are reporting that their sales are down. Restaurants are reporting that their sales are down. So we have this kind of tension between the objective number of 3%, you know, the economy is humming, everything is good, and potentially the lived experiences that people experience. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to turn to Susan, and I'm going to pick on Susan first. Susan, as you become mayor, you're going to have to give a number of, you know, state of the city addresses. As an economic development professional, what is the state of our economy?
So I think that the state of our economy is facing a lot of the same issues that we're facing all across the country. So all across the country, we're seeing record lows for unemployment. And I think really what we're starting to question now is how does is unemployment a true reflection of our economy? If people are working, are they working and making enough money to pay their bills? Are they working and making enough money to spend it in the stores to keep those going? So we've been chatting sort of amongst ourselves about what are the ways to record what our real unemployment is. Unemployment doesn't count people who just gave up and stopped looking. Unemployment doesn't count some people who just aren't qualified to work. And I think we see a lot of that in Humboldt, and we're like, how can we have no unemployment if we keep seeing people who are unemployed? I think somebody else jump in with me.
Does somebody have a hot take on the state of the economy?
Oh,
Greg?
Hot take. Well, you know, it's interesting because our we had so much employment here that was never recorded, right? They either didn't enter the labor force or they were not counted as employees because they were working under the table, right?
I have no idea what you could
do. Exactly. Yeah, believe it or not. And I grew up in Southern Humboldt. I saw it, right? You know, there was that whole segment where, cash was being generated, money was flowing through, you know, you had the immigrants coming and they were spending money, and then, as that is drying up, we are seeing, and I think the labor shortage here is real because while I'm often skeptical of statistics, I'm not necessarily skeptical when I speak to a number of employers who say, you know, and I ask them what their biggest problem is, and they say, we cannot find employees. And so it's interesting. So, yeah, we do see the historically low unemployment, but we also have, you know, high poverty rates still, and we do have you look at some of the cost of living versus the average wage here, and we have a real issue around that. And so we are economy in transition, and it's an old canard here that we're economy in transition. Well, every economy is in transition. That's what economies do. There's no such thing as a static economy.
Are we just, we're just under transition a little faster. We're under transition under steroids
something? So, you know, a year and a half ago, there's a major policy shift, or 2 years ago when Prop 64 passed, and all of a sudden our underground economy, illegal economy, if you want to use that term, had to really shift and change. And so there were economic factors that were occurring, you know, which was this big drop in the price of cannabis from the production level. But you couple with that with now changes in you know, you got to pay taxes and you got to do all this other stuff. So a lot of the free cash that these folks were generating are now being funneled into other places. For example, the county, you know, estimating it's going to collect $17 million in excise taxes. So that's $17 million that's going into the county coffers through the excise tax that may have gone somewhere else prior to this. So, you know, there's so much complexity in the way an economy works that, you know, there's people that get Nobel Prizes for it. I'm not one of those people.
And you have to, I think that it's important to bear in mind and to consider that these KPIs, these key performance indicators that we use to gauge and measure the economy, they're a snapshot of what's happened in the past.
Right.
So we're looking behind us. And you can't look at any one particular factor or indicator. You have to really look at them all together because they're road signs. What they are is they're pointing to the direction that we're moving in. And you're right. The economy is not static. It's always changing. It's always in transition. And so if you want to gauge and really ask the question, where are we at? What is the state of the economy for Humboldt? Let's talk about where we're going, because we don't have control over the past, but we can try to work together and implement different measures to make sure that we've got a strong economy moving forward.
All right. And so I think the strong economy moving forward will be a theme of the rest of tonight's talk. So these economic indicators. So if focusing on unemployment alone is inappropriate, what are the other things if someone were wanting to try to keep their finger on the pulse? And to look at these metrics, what are the other things that they should be looking at?
Let's go back to retail. You brought up retail earlier and the trend in retail sales. Retail is changing, it's evolving, and retail is becoming much more experiential. With a lot of retail going online, a lot of consumers are buying certain products and commodities off of the internet. But the retail industry is catching up with that, and you're seeing that retailers and retail landlords are changing their operations, and you're seeing much more of those retail type experiences that you can't get online. You can't get your hair cut online.
Right.
You can't go out and you can't go have a cup of coffee with a friend online. So I believe that the dip in retail sales that we have seen could in part reflect some of that change that's happening within the retail industry, but they're working on backfilling that loss of retail sales. Now, there's also the other issue that's come up with regards to retail and what impacts that, and that is Humboldt being such a strong, or has been in the past, cash economy. And that's something to consider as well, and how that's moving within the county and how that impacts retailers and consumer spending.
Because when it was a cash economy, you couldn't buy stuff online as easily.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
So the other indicator, though, that I was thinking of as well is just the availability of commercial space. And we're not seeing a higher availability of commercial space. And in fact, we are looking for more, which is an indicator that the economy is going well. We're not seeing, you know, blocks of empty storefronts.
You're talking about the vacancy rates.
So a lot of empty storefronts that we see actually are due to issues that aren't necessarily that people don't want them. I mean, we have a pretty full vacancy, at least in Eureka.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're seeing a lot of capital expenditure in improvement of real estate. And, you know, we can see that in Eureka and Arcata. A lot of it's canvas related. And you're seeing money being spent. I mean, there's a big building. If you drive down by Rio Del, you'll see a big building going up just north of there. And that's going to be a cannabis product manufacturing facility. So, that capital is flowing here, flowing in. Some of it's investment capital.
Capital flowing in from outside the county?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's probably both inside and outside, but a lot of it's outside, I think. And they're going to be, you know, that capital is going to flow into that building. Well, when that building is done, and, you know, assuming the business is successful, then you're going to see capital flowing into the pockets of the employees and, you know, theoretically being spent locally. And so I think, you know, when I walk into new businesses now, I visited one in Arcata that's 2 years old, right? If even that old, and they have 47 employees, you know, and it's like, wow. And they're a manufacturer of cannabis products. And
want to give a shout out to that business?
I will shout out. Yay, business. I'm not going to give out their name.
All right.
I do go visit these folks, but there was another one in Eureka that I went to, and, you know, I'm trying to learn about their business models and what works, and it's, how many do you have? And we have 30, you know, two shifts of 15. So that's a transition, right? I mean, those are jobs, and the city of Eureka has some great stats of how many The Sea of Eureka is not set up to do a lot of cultivation, obviously. There's some small indoor, but they're not really set up to do that. But, you know, the whole distribution, sales, manufacturing is where they're seeing a lot of growth. And you're seeing a lot of investment. The buildings are being built. And so when I work with someone like the Harbor District or some other publicly owned facilities where cannabis is not allowed, we're seeing sort of what we see as the cannabis refugees going over there, businesses who are now priced out of the sort of the old warehouse manufacturing spaces going over there. So I think that's a good sign. I mean, there's 200 people working in the old pulp mill now in various businesses. So, you know, again, these are all sort of proxies. They're all sort of like what you call the key performance indicator. You know, you're going to look at those things and go, you know, that's good. And when people are making that kind of investment in a fixed asset, that seems to indicate they're going to be here for a while.
All right. Well, so if you are a business owner or if you're an employee and you want to talk about the state of our economy, give us a call. The number is 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. Or this is my favorite way you can ask a question. Give us a text. The number is 492-KHSU. All right. Scott, I want to talk about the community economic development strategy. So
sure.
You talked about these performance indicators, they're kind of in the rear view mirror, right? Mm-hmm. The community economic development strategy, that's a mouthful, is our plan to move forward. So can you give us the 1 minute elevator speech on what this strategy is?
So we often refer to it as the SEDS by its acronym, or it's often referred to and known locally as the Prosperity Plan. The five-year amendment or update to that plan, which originally was adopted in 2012, was just passed by the Board of Supervisors, I believe it was two meetings ago that they adopted that plan. And now we have to submit it to the EDA for final approval, and then the plan can be, therefore, and that's the Economic Development Agency.
You saw me look.
What? Acronym so, bell goes off.
Bing. That's right. A lot of jargon. And,
right.
And, so it has to go through an approval process at the state level, and ultimately there's a federal review. But once it's fully adopted, we'll be implementing and rolling forward with that plan. So what does that mean, right? So, and I alluded to in the beginning that the county, we're somewhat of an umbrella, and we support the different agencies like Greg's agency, Susan's agency, in just maintaining economic vibrancy throughout the community. That's because as a county, we're looking at a top-down, high-level view of all the strategies for the different communities, of which there are many communities in Humboldt County, and the different strategies, they need to be tailored to those specific communities because the needs and wants of, perhaps Garberville could be different than what needs to occur up in McKinleyville. The strategy sets forth targets of opportunity and it identifies different industries that we should continue to maintain within the county, keep vibrant, and also new business development. What types of industries we should be bringing into the county, and that that goes along with, a lot with what Greg's organization is doing. He talked earlier about what you're doing at the airport,
and
broadband, and et cetera. It all ties in together.
All right. So if we're looking forward, what are these growth industries that we are wanting to bring into Humboldt County, or that we're wanting to grow within Humboldt County?
So the SEDS identifies different targets of opportunity, and some of those targets were actually identified in 2012 when the original plan was put together. And it was stakeholders and partners within the community who gave their input to identify what those key targets were, those key industries were. And they're industries that already exist within the county that contribute substantially to revenue and quality of life to the residents and the taxpayers of the county, as well as some industry gaps that we think that we have the ability to fill here within the county in terms of what infrastructure that we can provide. I can tell you that niche manufacturing is one that we're definitely looking at, and cannabis is huge, although in the comprehensive economic development strategy we refer to cannabis as alternative agriculture.
Is that because of the feds?
Yes. Yeah.
Gonna...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I saw that, and I got a good chuckle out of it.
Yeah, they don't, they you know, we had to, like, word search to make sure that
But it would be impossible to do a comprehensive strategy on Humboldt County without addressing specialty agriculture, alternative agriculture. Right, right, yeah. Because you just wouldn't be looking at all the evidence. You can't pretend it doesn't exist.
Right. No, it was a kind of a silly thing, obviously, but the federal government requires it. So so that's the way it was done.
All right. So we have alternative agriculture, which includes, I assume, the kind of myriad of other businesses that are related to, you know, testing, manufacturing.
It's quite a, you know, there's a lot of vertical integration there. I mean, if you look at the, you know, really closed loop, it's the testing, it's the manufacturing, it's the base production at the, you know, at the farm level, it's tourism, it's, you know, it's actually a truly complete kind of economy there in that, and probably some of the most complete we have in terms of a, you know, totally vertically integrated and growth, no pun intended, area that we have.
So niche manufacturing, just so we can kind of understand these terms, that is the kind of small scale manufacturing that we currently do have. So something like the Wing Inflatables, or Ohana Organics, you know,
Coca-Tat.
Yeah,
exactly.
Where are some of these other things that we can kind of, you know, crystal ball foresee will be an important part of our economic future?
You know, I think one of the things we're really, the theme I saw running through all the businesses and the business types, and I kind of take a step back and go, okay, what's the thread? And that's what the SEDS really does. It says, what's the thread that runs through all these in terms of key characteristics of these businesses, and also looking at those and saying what are their key needs. And one of the things is that runs through all of them. I don't care if it's a food business or a Coca-Tat or a you know, Marimba One or whatever. They're all very creative, right? And so they're very unique. It's a niche product, but it's unique and it's creative. And so there's a tremendous amount of creativity here. We have a lot of smart people trying to figure out how to do stuff, and I think that's something that we really need to nurture, because we don't have that everywhere. And in rural areas, that's, you know, I work with a lot of rural areas, and that's their biggest complaint, many of them, is that we have such a tremendous brain drain out of the rural areas that we're losing the intellectual capital that we need to create new stuff. So you know, that's the thread I see, and that's the thing that we need to nurture.
All right, let's hold on to this thread. We have a text question coming in. Michael?
Yeah, you were talking about the co-op earlier, and this texter had the question, how does the current state of the co-op reflect the state of other markets and grocery stores in Humboldt?
Does anyone have a good idea there?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When the co-op headline hit, and I don't have any firsthand knowledge, although I do go shop there once in a while, but I did go back through their minutes, you know, and wanted to see. And so, so the co-op, I think they were down at like $25,000 a month or something like that, which is a big number, right? But it's like 3% of their overall sales. And so, so as I was looking in there, and I don't want to go too far down this path, but my question became then, is it a revenue and expense problem? Is it a liquidity issue? Because they spent a lot of money building up inventory. They spent a lot of money on doing studies about remodeling. At the same time, we saw the big new Eureka Natural Foods opening in McKinleyville, so maybe they've lost some of their market share from up there. So, clearly retail sales are down across the board. But I don't want to. I think that when you see headlines and organizations only look to external forces for their issues. You know, I like I said, I'm an underwriter. I do loans all the time. So I always dig in and go, huh, yeah. So you tied up a lot of capital over here when your issue is liquidity. And that you tend to get, I'm getting in the weeds here on finance. But we look at profit and loss. We never look at cash flow and balance sheets. And you really need to look at that to understand what the issue is. So I think that the co-op is higher end. It's it's high quality and it can be more expensive. And so in an era where you have more competition, Eureka Natural Foods, for example, the new store up there. You're seeing, you know, the new grocery outlet and some other stuff up in McKinleyville. So you're seeing a lot of retail grocery being added in the last few years. Things are going to diminish a little bit.
Well, and I think I think there's evidence that perhaps in some areas in Humboldt County that we could be over-grocered as well.
Mm-hmm.
We've got vacant grocery boxes, dark grocers. There's the dark form of Ray's up in McKinleyville. You know, grocery, that's one of those expenditures. Because of the nature of it, they're perishable items. People aren't shopping for their groceries online. People don't stop buying groceries. It's just that their shopping behavior changes. So they're still buying groceries. Where are they purchasing?
Right.
And if they're not purchasing from the co-op, is...
I was going to say a market and a grocery store, they're all so different and they're mm-hmm. all run completely differently. So if you look at the, you know, just sort of the growth of Ray's and in its, you know, its lifespan, so to speak, it's still living, but it's in its senior years right now, I think. Yeah. Is very different from the co-op, which is very different from a canned food warehouse or a grocery outlet, which is doing really well mm-hmm. right now. I mean,
yeah, well, and you know, I mean, I've lived here pretty much all my life. I left for 8 years, but I think about the shopping experience when I was a kid. You know, I lived in Southern Humboldt, so we had a couple small markets. I mean, pretty small in Southern Humboldt. And then when you wanted to shop, big shop, you came to Eureka to the Safeway, or you went to Fortuna to the Safeway, and that was it, right? You had a lot of small markets and maybe one or two big grocery stores. Well, you know, you go around Eureka now, even Target selling groceries, Walmart selling groceries, mm-hmm. You know, grocery outlets selling groceries, Costco, Winco, Safeways. I mean, there's so much grocery, and it's such a thin margin business, right? I mean, it's like 1.5% margin on the bottom, so it's super competitive. And
and people are experimenting with going online as well.
And with farm to table becoming it's already been a growing trend,
right?
You know, how much of that shopping is now occurring in farmers markets,
right?
And those are all factors to be taken into consideration.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a really great question. Thank you. And so that should be a good reminder that you have a really good question on your mind, listener. Send it in. Text it to us at 492-KHSU or call 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. All right. So I liked where Greg was going on kind of themes of Humboldt's economy. And if I could summarize yours, is maybe entrepreneurship or creativity.
Right. I think it's true. You know, unless you have a particularly strong natural resource, right?
Which we do,
you know, but, and we were very much resource-based, right? Trees-based. Or if you're, you know, you're on a river or something and you're like a transportation corridor, you know, a community thrives when it's got a lot of smart people, entrepreneurial people and smart people. And so, you know, there's a lot of writing on this. None of this is particularly new with me, but how there's this race for talent, and the communities have to be attracting talent. You used to move to a place because you could mine something or you could grow something. Now there's a lot more flexibility in what you do and where you go. And so all of a sudden you have to start looking at, okay, so what, you know, how do we attract the people and retain the people and support the people who are going to bringing investment of cash and knowledge into our community? And that is kind of the way to start attacking economic growth.
And, you know, a lot of the places that we talk about that have established this niche manufacturing, they came around, you know, 20, 30 years ago, maybe 15. I always talk about... there's rural and then there's very rural. We are very far away and isolated from places. It's not just like we're an hour away from somewhere. And so people here tend to be more creative out of necessity.
Right.
And a lot of the businesses that started here were because people didn't want to leave. So they invented and innovated their way into creating a job. And what we really need to do is continue to nurture that, right now. And so we need the businesses today that when, as these others, you know, start to retire, if they can't be passed on, we have others growing up in their stead.
Yes. And with that, also look at, you know, you talk about how rural we are, and I've heard the term isolated, which we are. And I look at that as also being an advantage mm-hmm. and a benefit Humboldt County.
I think for the innovation part especially.
For the innovation part. And also look at how remote workers are now beginning to grow in number and relocate throughout the country and into different regions. If you can do the majority of your workload online, as long as you have an internet connection and you can upload and download files, I think that some of those individuals within the workforce who have the ability to work remotely, and these could be independent professionals and a variety of different professions, they're going to be looking for areas where that can deliver that quality of life that they're looking for. I can tell you my own personal experience, having been having relocated to Humboldt County. My commute time used to be close to 50 minutes one way, and that was from home into the office. And the air quality with that, because of the traffic congestion, was also poor. So coming to a more remote, small, if you will, or rural, isolated community was something very appealing to me, mm-hmm. because I could get away from that. Better quality of life here.
I also think, you know, because we're so isolated as well as rural, we have sort of a city element within it. We're not just, we have our little, we're the biggest city on the coast north of, Fort Bragg?
Yeah, certainly Santa. Well, yeah, I mean, the biggest city on the water is us from mm-hmm. San Francisco, right?
Yeah, because Fort Bragg's smaller than us. Yeah, even all the way up to Washington. We're a big little city. So we have art and culture and even a little traffic, but just enough to keep it real.
I don't know.
All right. So we have an advantage for our economy, our great outstanding natural beauty. What are some of the other kind of inherent advantages that we have here in Humboldt County that should kind of direct our economic future?
I think we should really talk about climate resiliency mm-hmm. and look at what's happening with the climate. Look at the Paradise Fire. Look at some of the weather events that are occurring around the country. I think that climate refugees is something that, we've talked about that in our office together. And Greg and I actually share an office building. We're both in the Prosperity Building in Eureka. As individuals become more aware of climate change and just how dangerous potentially climate change can be, they're going to be looking for climate resilient areas to live and to raise their families mm-hmm. and operate their businesses. And that's something that we have here in Humboldt County.
That's definitely true. We're not safe from all disasters, but...
No. We used to be the disaster capital of California, right? It's just that, we've lost that mantle, I think, to a certain extent. But
that's something we need, and I bring that up because it's something we need to be prepared for.
Exactly, right. Because we need to build the infrastructure mm-hmm. to bring in people from...
So you said these, I forgot what the term you called them, not remote workers. Was it remote workers?
Yeah, remote workers.
I'm so smart. Do we have the infrastructure currently to kind of accept those types of jobs? Is our internet good enough?
We're pretty good. I mean, so I have a somewhat more historical perspective. I moved back up here in 1991 and from Sacramento. And when I came up, I was a consultant and my clients were all out of the area. So I literally set up a bulletin board on my 386 SX computer with my 2400 baud modem and I flew a lot. And so I fly a lot. People would call in and we could transmit data, like tiny bits, very slow, but that was how I was able to live and work up here. And I worked with Maggie Gaynor and that's what we did. So fast forward a few years later, I'm at a conference in San Diego. This is about 2000, 2001. And I was talking, I was at a session and the guy was talking, he was a San Diego Business Journal editor. And he said, he was talking about incubator at San Diego, incubator, the economic development incubator graduates who are going out and trying to find places to start their businesses. And I said, do you know where Humboldt County is? And he says, absolutely. Because my daughter went to school at Davis, but we would travel over the North State. And I said, so does a isolated rural community have any chance of attracting any of these incubator businesses? And these are technology-based businesses. And again, this is like 2000, 2001. He says, I only want to know two things. how good's your air service and how good's your broadband? And I said, well, neither are very good right now, but at least I now have a long-term thing to work on.
That was what you dedicated your life to. Yeah, what an important meeting with
exactly,
that guy.
Exactly. No, he's since passed away. I was actually looking him up the other day, and it's like, oh, shoot, that's his obituary. I guess I won't be getting in touch with him.
So then
But it was about connecting, right? And so we can be remote but not isolated, and I think that's important because mm-hmm. when you're isolated, you disconnect yourself from people or economies or communities. So it's okay to be remote, but you can't be isolated, and so that means you need to find different ways to connect. And so for me, it's broadband and airport.
All right, let's go to Scott. You two were fighting.
I know.
Oh, it's an exciting subject.
Yeah, go.
So, why is this important? Why is it critical that we have good broadband access? We bring fiber into the community, or we have good air service. It goes back to a comment that was made earlier. I think Greg, maybe you made the comment about getting the right people on the bus, having mm-hmm. the right people here. Our greatest resource as a county is going to be our human resource.
Right.
We need to have the right individuals and the right mindset here. With that, the rest of it falls into place. You have all of the right minds within the community. You just need to collaborate and bring people together so that we can tackle some of these economic issues that we are facing as a county.
And what I was going to say is our internet resources, too. I think we have more infrastructure than we understand. Mm-hmm. I think that we have not even really learned to explain to incoming businesses what our infrastructure is. That's kind of what I understand, is that we undersell ourselves. And so I think that not only do we have to increase our services, but we also just need to learn how to talk about what we already do have.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Greg, I'll turn to your favorite subject now since we're on the talk of infrastructure. And that is flights in and out of Humboldt County.
Sure.
And let me be the first to say thank you to Fly Humboldt and to your work, Greg, because I'm flying to L.A. on December 31st to watch my University of Washington Huskies play the Ohio State University in the Rose Bowl, where
nice.
The Huskies are just
go gonna, dogs.
Yeah, they're going to demolish the Buckeyes, right?
Right.
And that flight was possible because of the work that you did to get United to fly down to LAX. So,
right.
So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I did that just for you.
I felt like it.
Yeah.
all right. So we now have flights to San Francisco and LAX.
Right.
Are more flights in the works?
Right. So we start Denver service on June 7th. So we'll have a direct to Denver starting in June. And that'll be good because it gives us, although LA is a good United hub, United is, and I won't get too far in the weeds, but is building up some alternative hubs in the West. Denver, of course, is a big hub, and the Denver airport is getting on tap for a big major upgrade. And so we'll have Denver, and what that will do is we'll leave here at like 6:30 in the morning on the Denver flight. It'll get there just a little bit before 10 their time. But then they have another big bank of connecting flights that leave around 11. And so that's going to allow us to get to the East Coast in one hop, which you can do now through San Francisco. But, now we'll have alternatives. If one's stormed out, the other one, you can voucher over to another flight. If it's rainy and foggy here, maybe Denver's good, you can do that. And you're going east rather than south and then east.
So we've had flights to other areas in the past.
Absolutely. We used to have, in 2008-09, we had, we were a 3-airline, 6-destination airport.
Well, so what happened? Was that a loss of federal subsidies or was that...
No,
just underutilization locally.
Neither, actually. It's it's interesting. We had Delta for a year, and that was actually pretty successful in terms of number of people flying. And we started recruiting that in early 2007. We got it in 2008. Recession hit. Delta kind of pulled back. All three went bankrupt, the big three, and there's mergers and stuff. And so, and then we had Alaska for a number of years. They pulled out in 2011 for a couple of reasons, one of which was overall company strategy was changing. We also, quite honestly, did not treat our airlines very well as a county. And we began to learn, and we're much better now at the County of Humboldt, at treating those airlines like customers. Because they're here only because they want to be. They, we don't you know, we don't have any ability to tell them what to do, or you know, they're only here because they want to do business and make money here. And so once we start treating them more like customers, and then what we do is we meet with multiple airlines multiple times a year, and we pitch. That's all we do. We pitch. You can make money here. Come here. Here's, you know, here's what we can do to, we'll help you promote. We'll do all this stuff, but we want you here. And we have just a whole ton of data, because it's all publicly reported on markets and fares and everything else. So it's a sell job. That's what we do. And again, I'll go back to, you know, I could not have moved back here in our business, which had, you know, at its height, you know, like, it wasn't big. It was, we had 11 employees, but we could not have survived without a functioning airport. And this is in the 90s. And you know, that connectivity, again, we can be remote but not isolated. I think that's, you know, why I'm so focused on that.
All right. Well, and so I'm hoping that I might be able to start a fight over this next subject.
Yes.
So, is Richardson Grove a barrier? And just for listeners out there, Richardson Grove is the kind of the choke point which prevents this larger category of truck, STAA trucks, from getting into Humboldt County on 101. And my organization has been proudly stopping them at the gate.
I was going to say the fight's not going to be between the three of us. It's just going to be
Scott's brand new. He's like, Richardson Grove?
Well, you're safe.
So is Richardson Grove an inhibitor of our economy? Or the lack of STAA access?
I would say Richardson Grove is not an inhibitor of our economy. It's the fact that 101 goes right through it.
He's already got the politicians.
Well, tell me about that. Educate me.
Well, and I don't know the history behind the development of that road, right? You know, I would be very curious as to why, and I assume that somehow from an engineering perspective and cost perspective, it was easier to take 101 right through the Redwoods. Perhaps it was also done in a way to draw people up through the Redwoods.
Well, and that's all 101 was. It was always through the Redwoods because it went right along the river.
Yeah.
You know, and I grew up on what's now Highway 254, the Avenue of the Giants. But
if you were to develop something like that today, you wouldn't take it through Redwoods.
No. But when they built the highways, they went along the rivers, right? Because that was the only flat spot to go along.
And so it's easier to follow those banks. And it's not because where am I going with this? Preserving and maintaining the health of the Redwood Forest and Richardson Grove and others, I think is critical to our economy, because it does bring in a lot of tourism and it brings in a lot of visitors. But having a road which is not STAA certified, or that we don't have that access, it does prohibit some movement of goods and services up through 101 and through the Grove. That's just the fact of it.
Right.
So the question then becomes, how do you mitigate that? How do you address that issue? How do you protect the Redwoods? And can you do that and make alterations or deviations to the road or the path of travel so that you can enhance movement up and down that corridor?
One thing that is going to be particularly challenging now is as they're requiring trucks to make improvements, a lot of the trucks that are currently driving on that road that are small enough to do it are no longer going to be able to get certified, and folks are only going to have the larger trucks. So that's just something that's upcoming pretty quickly, that we're going to have to take into consideration, that those smaller trucks are going to be less and less available.
So in talking to businesses and the need for this larger STAA truck, has the opening of Buckhorn Summit on 299, so we can now have STAA trucks on 299, has that acted as sort of a release valve? Do we have sufficient access into the county for STAA trucks now?
You know, I'll be honest, I haven't visited this subject in quite a while, because, you know, right now it's all in litigation, right? So,
and it will be forever.
Yeah, no, exactly.
As long as I live, it will be in litigation.
We'll let you guys fight it out in the courts. And quite honestly, as it's fought in the courts, it sort of eliminates the whole policy discussion, right? Because we're kind of irrelevant at this point while the big guns fight. But But you know, there are two corridors, and the SDAA trucks are now able to come over from I-5, and theoretically that relieves some of the pressure, but it's still a roundabout way because the Bay Area is still our closest biggest market, and so so I think there is you know negative consequence of having that not there. The question becomes then, you know, from a policy perspective, and this is what people grapple with, whether or not that's a big enough negative to make the changes needed there. And my, you know, I had an old, you know, my current board hasn't even addressed this subject. I had a board years and years ago when it came up, and they basically said we were for the improvements, if you want to call them that, or you would call it destruction.
wanton destruction.
So they came out in favor of it, and the idea, you know, I think they said, well, you know, there will be some negative, potentially negative consequences of the improvement, you know, the realignment or whatever you want to call it, but that I think they felt that they were not so drastic that required not happening. Of course, good people disagreed strenuously with that, and that's why we're in court now, not having a policy discussion.
I think, too, a lot of the focus goes to things like last chance grade, or remember when Confusion Hill was washing out all the time. I mean, those were emergency things where ideals sort of...
Yeah, go by the wayside. If 101's gone, you gotta punch in the road somehow.
Right,
so,
right,
yeah. Yeah, so I think that's what a lot of the focus is on now. Obviously not Confusion Hill.
All right. Well, we have somebody who wants to talk about Richardson Grove. I knew that this was going to happen. Like, all right. Patch him in, Michael.
He's on. He wanted to go on after you guys were done talking about Richardson Grove.
Oh.
You guys
all
want
right.
to continue? Or,
No.
Go ahead.
Right.
Bring him on.
Okay, he's on.
All right. Hi, caller. What's your question?
Hi. Inevitably, I'm bringing it back to cannabis. And the first thing I want to say is I want to congratulate the panel for bringing up cannabis. Right out the gate, there was a show of basically the same title on the same radio station not more than 6 or 7 years ago that had a bunch of academics on it who I had to call up and bring to their attention that cannabis was a major driver in the economy because they were skirting around the issue. And you guys launched into it out front. But the question I have is... When I look at the metrics here, and I'm not an economist, I see a situation where between, and these are arguable statistics, but between somewhere between 4 and maybe 10,000 small growers populated the region, making, for the most part, a good middle-class income. And what I see the shift happening is that there are going to be maybe several hundred, maybe 1,000 or so managerial positions, if that many, and then maybe the big bosses or the owners of these companies, there'll be far fewer of those. And the rest of the occupational opportunities in the cannabis industry will be at pretty depressed wages, or pretty low wages, not depressed necessarily, but at least not working class wages as opposed to middle class, which is going to cause, and a bunch of the capital, especially with the larger industrial elements working here is going to leave the county. Not to say that it didn't before, but I sense that shift is going to happen. So how do you, first of all, is that something, that perception something that you share? And secondly, if it is, or well, if it's not, tell me why it's not. And if it is, how are the modeling processes for county future incomes being adjusted to account for that fact, if it is a fact?
All right, that's a great question. Thank you so much, caller. Susan, did I see that you wanted to answer that first?
Yeah, well, so I will talk about a little bit of it. I think one of the things that's really interesting about the cannabis industry is that when we used to have growers who were the entire industry. So they did the growing all the way through, you know, the distribution and the selling, and that meant that the growers had had a nice, tidy income. Now that it's a different kind of industry and we have so many different permits, and it's hard, but growers are farmers now. They're growing the commodity, and where they used to be the whole chain, they're now the growers. So, right. So folks who grow lettuce, or I like to say pineapples, the people who grow the pineapples aren't the ones that are making the money. It's the ones who are canning it and distributing it. And so I think it's a whole change of the industry. And you're right. So we do have, now we have different managerial, we have manufacturing jobs. We don't have, the processing is obviously going to be paid less. It's not underground. It's not, they have to, but they're paying a lot of taxes. I don't know if you've heard that, but the cannabis businesses are being quite stressed having to go through all of their regulation. So I think it's just different. You know, those who are doing testing and research and manufacturing are experiencing different things than the growers, and the growers have a lot to adjust.
Hold your feet to the fire in terms of answering my question. Are you saying to me that you think that the new job opportunities, et cetera, are compensatory in terms of the amount of income that the county's going to generate for its residents or...
Well, they're not, because they have a lot of expenses that they didn't used to have. It used to just be a really easy, you would grow a product, you would sell a product, and you didn't have all of those other expenses. You didn't have payroll or...
Right. Okay, so given that, how are your forecasts and how are the ways that you see the future of the county adapting to that adjustment? Because it seems to me that in terms of overall personal income in the county, it's going to take a hit. And
I think you're right. Absolutely. I think that we're going to be on a bit of a roller coaster for a while to figure out what legal cannabis is like as an industry, and it is not going to be the same as the black market cannabis.
Yeah, and you know, it's hard to, I always get the question, you know, what's the economy going to look like in 5 years? And I say, well, ask me in seven. And, you know, because
that goes back to those KPIs.
Yeah, right. You know, Robert Reich once said that, you know, economists only exist to make astrologers look good. But you're absolutely right. And the margin's getting squeezed. I mean, it's going to act like a traditional sort of agricultural economy. Which Susan's right. You know, you could, I mean, when I grew up in Southern Humboldt, you made good weed, you sold it, and, you know, not, I didn't, I wish I had, I'd be, you know, retired by now, but, and so now we've got, you know, when you go from the farm to the final product, you have a lot more fingers in the pie. So even the price is down, so the margin is tighter, and, but there are good jobs now at the upper level, but they take a really different kind of skill. And so when I was visiting some of these manufacturers, you know, I was seeing people with you know, good science degrees and managerial degrees. And so they could have been in almost any business, and that's what they were doing. The dairy industry is similar, right? You know, we used to have just a gazillion small dairies. If you had 50 cows, you could make money. And some of these people even bottled their own milk and sold it and delivered it. And so, you know, now we have a lot fewer dairies because the margin's a lot thinner, and you have one big processor or two big processors. And so that's the model that's going to work, and you become a lot, you know, the jobs float to different places. So how do we react to that? We acknowledge it. And we have to be, this county was never very good at acknowledging change, and trying to figure out how to deal with it. And we blamed a lot of external forces for things that were occurring naturally in the economy. But we also need to say, okay, so if this is the reality of maybe a lower margin, production and then we're adding value going up the chain, then we need to figure out how to invest in that whole chain and get people trained and into those positions.
And the caller brings up a good point. When cannabis was an underground economy, just because of the nature of how those transactions occurred, it was more lucrative at the time for some of the operators and the growers. Now that it's becoming more mainstream, we are going to see wage compression. Mm-hmm. And that happens in any industry, and it's now happening to cannabis because it's being legitimized. I think one thing that is critical with regards to cannabis and how it affects our future. You know, you look at the findings that were presented to the board a few meetings ago, and I believe that the total revenue that the county had derived from the regulation and permitting of cannabis and those revenues exceeded $17 million.
Yeah, the excise tax, I think, alone was $17 million.
$17.7 million. And that is great for our economy, and that's good for Humboldt. However, as the curtains are drawn back and the walls surrounding cannabis begin to fall, and one day, and this may be heresy to say, but one day when it's federalized, we will not be able to compete on a commodity basis in the cannabis world.
Thank you very much for that. I wasn't going to sound this note, but the most Cassandra of me, the most negative outlook that I can see is, why would cannabis stay in Humboldt County? It doesn't have good soil.
No, exactly.
It doesn't have, the water is becoming scarcer and scarcer. There are much better places in the state that if it was developed, and there also is going to be a conflict with hemp in some of those areas.
Yep.
But nonetheless, I see this county really having to protect this industry here if it wants to keep it. And the county, at the county level and also in terms of economic development stuff, has to look at this as a potentially threatened industry simply because of the fact that
you've got all of us nodding our heads.
Yeah, I was going to say it's terrible radio, but we're all...
On that note, I'm going to let you guys go on. And,
thank you.
I'm appreciative of the level-headed approach you are taking to this whole thing.
Thank you. Yeah, and that comment was just coming from the county's director of economic development too. What a world that we live in now that the county can
talk about that, right?
Exactly. How cool. All right, speaking of cool, and we have about 5 minutes left, I want to talk about the cool ideas that you have, the big ideas that excite you that we could bring to Humboldt County economic development-wise. What are the things that other people are doing that you want to bring here that inspire you? Or what are the things that people are doing currently right now, like the incubator that the Eureka Chamber of Commerce is starting, that you think are going to be revolutionary in our economy?
You know, one of the things I'm really excited about, and I was able to participate in a committee to review the proposals is the offshore wind energy. And of course, now we have another project down by Rio Del, which is onshore wind energy. And I think that's pretty exciting because it is taking advantage. I mean, we have a lot of wind.
It's windy here.
Right. It's windy here. And you know, in the past, that probably wasn't ever considered something that was an economic benefit, right? And so now it is. We have a great competitive advantage for that. And I think that, you know, it's not just the fact that we'll have potentially a bunch of windmills out in the ocean or on the hills, making energy, but then that will result in, you know, investments in the port. We could become, you know, if we're the first to do that, we could also be the place where they bring some of these things in to be worked on. Our port is particularly beneficial for these in a certain extent because we don't have a bridge over the entrance of the port. So, I mean, these things are big.
Yeah, believe it or not, they're so tall that the Golden Gate Bridge would clip them.
Exactly. So you can't get under the, you know, the Golden Gate or the Bay Bridge. And so that's got me kind of excited.
All right, Scott, you got 1 minute. What are you excited about?
I'm excited about where technology is taking us in terms of how we can continue to develop and utilize I guess some of the free space and open space that we have in the county for coastal dependent industry. And I think there's real opportunity to bring in more of that into the county, and that will in turn create jobs.
So I want to pause. Are you talking about bringing in more coastal dependent industries or opening up some of that CDI zoned land to other things?
I'm talking about bringing in more of utilizing the existing land that we have now, which is already zoned as coastal dependent for coastal dependent industry, and bringing in more of those users and operators with here to operate in Humboldt County. We've got a unique position along the coast, and in terms of our port and the access that we have to other major markets, like, you know, down San Francisco and up to Oregon and Washington, and I think we should be utilizing that.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds cool. Susan.
Okay, so I'm just going to do a shameless plug for what I'm working on, because my passion is engaging and retaining young professionals, building the workforce. So I've just introduced a website called workforceweekend.com, where we are trying to bring together, fill that gap between expectations of employers and expectations of job seekers. And so it's I call it kind of cross between match.com and a job fair. Somebody who's looking for work can go through the business directory of businesses who are interested in finding employees and apply whether there's a job available or not, using a pretty sophisticated application that does not ask you your skills, does not ask you your background, and does not ask you...
Cool. Yeah. So a young person who's listening, where would they find that website?
It's just workforceweekend.com.
All right, workforceweekend.com. Well, this has been another fun episode of Thursday Night Talk. I'd like to thank my great guest, Scott Adair, Director of Economic Development at Humboldt County, Greg Foster, Executive Director at REDEC, and Susan